This is Marking Out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Follow on Twitter. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Marking out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Spreading like fisting. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. We're marking out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans.
Welcome to Marking Out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans. This is episode 689. Make sure you check out all of our previous episodes at markingout.com. Also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you may be listening to podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. Buy a t-shirt over at prowrestlingtees.com/markingout. Give us a follow over on Instagram and on TikTok at MarkingOut11 and over on Twitter at MarkingOut and wherever else you may be on social media platforms. Make sure that you are also following myself, Dave the Rave, over on all social media platforms at DavidPTDPT. You can follow Chris over on Twitter at ChrisSweenDog and Instagram CMSweeney85. And you can go follow the person I am about to introduce to you, the legend himself. He signs more autographs than anybody else on this entire planet. He is a giver. He is a man of men. He is somebody who everybody looks up to. But you can follow him on all social media platforms at BTTG161. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing awesome as always. How about yourself?
Doing great, thank you. How was your week?
I didn't do anything, really.
Okay. So. Cracker Barrel?
Cracker Barrel. You had the grossest experience of Cracker Barrel, quite honestly. And yeah, obviously I went to Cheesecake Factory.
Duh, of course. Did you get cheesecake?
No.
Ooh.
Actually, technically no, but yes, I tried the pecan cookie dough one, but it was just mid. I don't know. I don't like pecans. I don't like cookie dough. So
I love cookie dough.
I wouldn't recommend it. It didn't taste like cookie dough to me. What I did try outside of Cheesecake Factory were the Reese's frozen fruit banana slices.
Mm-hmm.
Those were, I think, good. I think it could use a little bit more peanut butter flavor, but and I feel bad talking about this to you because you can't you can't eat it.
No, it's all good.
But yeah, outside of that, how was your week?
My week was good. I did have some Cracker Barrel.
Disgustingly.
It was leftover Cracker Barrel, but still happy I've had it because now I think next time I go there, I may just get meatloaf if I go.
Meatloaf is good.
Yeah, I've never got it there before, never tried it, but I feel like if I got it on that day that we went with F. Scott, that I would have been able to eat that. It wasn't too heavy on the stomach, it hit the spot. But yeah.
I've been there where I've ordered breakfast and then stayed, I was so hungry, I ordered lunch. And that I had gotten the meatloaf.
That's too funny. But good deal, good deal. Yeah, week was good. But how about we just get into it? Just going to wish Chris, Fallen Angel, a very happy birthday. It was his birthday week. He celebrated his birthday the other day. So from all of us, we are wishing him a very happy birthday. Wanted to get the happy birthday wishes out there before we get the show going any further. But talking about getting the wishes and the show further, how about we talk about some pro wrestling talk, sports entertainment talk, whatever you want to call it. I guess we could call it pro wrestling now because pro wrestling's back in there. But let's talk about pro wrestling talk and talk about some Monday Night Raw.
Which kicked off with Rhea Ripley, who unfortunately came to the ring in a sling. It was reported earlier in the day that she was injured during the brawl with Liv Morgan last week and might have to give up the title. Nobody knew anything, obviously, until she actually showed up with her arm in the sling. And she informed us that she'll be on the bench for a few months and has to vacate that championship, which is very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, very, very sad that, you know, seeing everything that she's been doing and going through, and the fact that now she has to vacate a title that she 100% deserves. She's carrying the women's division right now.
Yeah. But she was furious with Liv Morgan, and Liv came out. Security held both of them back, and then Rhea Ripley was so pissed off, she took a security guard out. Storyline-wise, Rhea Ripley was the one who cost Liv Morgan months of her career with a shoulder arm injury. She smashed it in a chair. So, which Liv Morgan brought up later on and said Rhea Ripley got what she deserved, and basically the end game of her revenge tour is to become champion.
Yeah, I think that's huge, the how it all plays into factor with her saying, like, a shoulder for a shoulder.
I think, you know, she has to win the championship next week.
Yeah, you know, do you think that Liv Morgan is going to try to get in with Judgment Day now, or just
go on her own? Why would she? She's to play mind games
with Rhea Ripley
Day.
with how Rhea Ripley,
they would look like idiots if they accepted her in there.
Well, one person could just look foolish and like a kid, which he is a kid in the group.
I don't think
Maybe she could try to win over Dominic to get into the mind games of Rhea Ripley. It would be a good way to keep everything active.
I think that would make no sense. Especially, I mean, the backstage segment that they had, I thought was a very nice segment where it literally ends with Dominic saying, "I love you," and she responds, "Te amo."
Mm-hmm.
There's no possibility. I would be so pissed off if something like that happened. But even being injured, I think Rhea Ripley came out of that segment looking very strong.
Yeah. I agree.
And then we had Nia Jax also later on put all the women on notice. She wants the title. We don't know the match as of right now. We know a new champion will be crowned next week.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. You know, hopefully, I don't even know what direction to go with now that Rhea Ripley's out.
Yeah, it has to be Liv wrecking havoc or whatever.
Meh.
Wreaking havoc?
Wreaking?
I don't know. It doesn't. It neither sound right, but wreaking havoc, I believe, is the word. But after that, we saw Sheamus make his return, picking up the victory over Ivar with a remix of his Brawling Brutes theme with the theme song that everybody's been wanting back. And that was nice to hear. Sheamus sporting a style of trunks that I don't think he's worn since FCW, which I thought was interesting. And it's been 8 months since we've seen him. So it's just nice to see Sheamus back.
I mean, the match itself was good.
And at first, you know, I wasn't a fan of his first match back being against Ivar, because I think both of them do need those victories. But as the match went on, I saw it wasn't a quick squash match, and it actually turned out to be a nice match between both of them.
Yeah. Something I didn't like was everybody kind of getting on top of Sheamus for his appearance and the way that he was.
Which I didn't even like. It didn't faze me that he was maybe a bit bigger until everyone started pointing it out. And even so, who cares?
Meh.
And Sheamus, he took to Twitter and said, "Look, the original goal for me was the draft. I got called up a few weeks early, I guess." So, and he's been in the gym, according to Sheamus, ever since then. And truthfully, it's nobody's business. Almost cursed.
Yeah, I mean, be happy that the guy's back.
Yeah, absolutely.
The guy went through a lot of the surgery and rehabilitation and everything. He's back in the ring. You know, leave him alone.
Yeah. After that, Triple H came out. And he and Adam Pearce showed off brand new tag team championships for the Awesome Truth. I don't like them.
Really? What don't you like about them?
I don't know. They look goofy. I don't understand why they would choose that like maroonish color on there.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense to me. But I saw a lot of people put them over saying, oh, finally the old coins are gone or whatever. I didn't hate those titles.
I don't mind the coins.
Yeah, I don't mind them. But these, it feels like there's too much going on the,
I don't know. I like the plate itself.
Yeah, I don't, not a fan.
Yeah, I don't,
I'm sure it'll grow on me, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah, but this entire thing, this segment was hilarious when Awesome Truth came out and R-Truth referring to Triple H as Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah, totally pop for that.
After that, DIY picked up the victory over The New Day and the Creeds to become number one contenders. Before the match started, though, during New Day's entrance, we had a QR code that popped up, which led to a website for WWE that had two separate pictures on it that if you combined both of them was a link, and then you would go to that link and it would lead to another picture and a video. So we're getting those QR codes. We're getting everything right now except for White Rabbit. It's a different song.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. There was rumors that Eric Rowan is pulling off indie shows and appearances. People think that could have something to do with this storyline.
I mean, that would be... I'm all for it. I just hope that whatever they're doing, they don't rush, but they also don't let it settle for too long where it loses interest, you know?
I don't think Matt Hardy is part of this, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Broken Matt or Woken Matt Hardy part of this group. Now that he's done with AEW.
Okay. I didn't think about that. That would be interesting.
I thought it was funny to return the fact that R-Truth referred to Triple H as Ciampa, that Ciampa received Triple H chants. I thought that was funny. And I figured that DIY would win this match, but I could have used more from it.
Yeah, I guess. Didn't do much for me. But next up, you had The Way pick up the victory over Ivy Nile and Maxine. Expected?
No, I wouldn't say it expected at all.
I don't know.
Maxine went to tag Ivy Nile in, which she did, but Indy Hartwell ended up getting in the ring to distract the referee. And then behind the referee's back, she knocked Maxine out and threw Candice LeRae on top to pick up that victory. Yeah, I don't think that's an expected victory or outcome at all.
I don't think the outcome... I mean,
that's
Indy
Hartwell now turning heel at that point.
Yeah, I don't think what took place was predictable, but I definitely feel like them picking up the victory was for me.
I thought for sure that given everything that's been going on with them lately, that it would be Maxine picking up that pin.
Interesting.
After that, we saw Andrade pick up the victory over Dominic. They aired a video package for Damian Priest, and then he fired up the Judgment Day. And I popped big time at commentary bringing up the interview that Rey Mysterio had done, where he... I don't know if he necessarily said that he wished Eddie would have won the custody of Dominic or something in the interview, but that went viral. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious where he just totally bashed winning it.
And I wouldn't say bashed, but obviously it's...
He's not too happy that he won.
Yeah, and JD McDonagh ends up getting involved in this match. Dominic hit a destroyer on the apron, which I thought was pretty crazy. And then when he went for that 619, Andrade got up, rocked him with that awesome back elbow, knocks JD McDonagh off the apron, hits that new finisher of his to pick up the victory.
Nice win for Andrade, but that move on the apron with the Canadian destroyer by Dominic, I did not expect that to happen. That was cool.
No. And as soon as the match was over, JD McDonagh jumped Andrade, and Ricochet made the save. So this is the match that I thought we were going to see at WrestleMania. Seems like it's taking shape, perhaps for Backlash.
Next up, you had Chelsea Green and Piper Niven pick up the victory over Katana Chance and Caden Carter. Very happy that Green and Niven pick up the victory on this one.
This was an unexpected victory for me, too, given all the losses that Chelsea's been eating. I thought the crossbody attempt, I should say, that Katana Chance did off of Chelsea's back, I thought was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But Piper Niven put her down, hits a crossbody on Kaden Carter, and Chelsea Green, I guess, kind of stole the victory there, but not really stole the victory because it's her teammate. She took advantage of her teammate, I guess, to get that victory.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed that segment. After that, we had Cody Rhodes come out, and he thanked Adam Pearce for allowing him to still show up on Monday Night Raw, given that he is a SmackDown champion. And then he mentioned AJ Styles and LA Knight. He mentioned Seth Rollins being his Shield at WrestleMania and thanked him for that. And he also said that he thinks that The Rock has a lot more than just one match left in him. I think The Rock may have put something out on Instagram that said he has one more in him. So it seems like Cody thinks there's more than that. He also addressed saying, I guess The Rock also said something about making Cody bleed again on Instagram. And Cody said that if he bleeds, The Rock is going to bleed too. Which we didn't see that last time. So, and a lot of people were like, how was there no blood in this WrestleMania match? There was blood on Monday Night Raw.
Why did you need, I mean, you didn't really need it.
I think because they got that taste of blood on Raw, they expected it because that's what pro wrestling is right now.
Yeah.
Cody also brought up Tama Tonga debuting on SmackDown. Should you have thoughts on that?
I mean, it was incredible. I thought that the reaction was really cool. I love the camera angle that they didn't show him getting into the ring or anything like that. And I liked how his hood remained on his head during the attack too until he decided to flip it off for the reveal. Definitely happy with all of that. I like Solo being in charge now, especially because Roman Reigns left him
in charge.
Well,
we don't necessarily know if he's in charge or if Roman Reigns is even... We don't know who's the tribal chief at that point.
Exactly. But Roman did say he was going... He is the next in command to him. So I'm definitely happy with the direction of it all.
And then Cody Rhodes brought Jey Uso out and spoke to him about being number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. And he asked if he can have Jey's back for the next match. And Jey said no. And Jey picks up the victory over Finn Balor. Jey was interviewed earlier on about Tama Tonga and his attack on Jimmy. And he just said, man, I told Jimmy to come with me. He tried to get Jimmy out of that bloodline a long time ago, and Jimmy didn't listen to him. Mm-hmm. And now Jimmy fell victim to the bloodline 2.0, it seems. And then he shifted focus to Finn Balor. And then we get to the match later on where Finn Balor actually starts by attacking Jey from behind. And I thought it was a good match.
You know.
Yeah,
I agree. I thought it was a solid match. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was necessary, especially to maintain the thought of Main Event Jey. Like, with him having the nickname Main Event Jey, I want him to pick up the victories. I want him to be pushed to the main event, you know? But I understand why he wasn't the main event tonight.
And then,
I'm glad he picked up the victory.
And then Damian Priest showed up to stare Jey Uso down. JD McDonagh and Dominic both attacked Jey Uso. Finn Balor joined in. Jey fought back and he was able to, I don't want to say run off, but like ran off kind of. And then the camera literally follows him up the steps and out of the building. And when he got outside, Sami Zayn was standing there looking up at the sky. And he hyped himself up and then made one of the sickest entrances we've ever seen in WWE history.
Yeah, I thought that was incredible. The follow through up to Sami Zayn looking at not the solar eclipse.
Yeah.
You know, with him just looking up and staring, and Jey, like, it made you wonder. Like, I didn't know if he was going to be attacked by someone, but with him going to everything, it was just going through. It was awesome. Then it led to Sami Zayn getting pumped up, walking through the arena, getting slaps on the back, all the way to his theme song playing, and then you have the entrance. It was really awesome.
When Jey was going outside, I thought we were going to maybe see Tama Tonga.
That's what I thought too. So that's, like, I was expecting maybe Tama Tonga or Solo to be standing outside of the arena or something. Like, I honestly, at first, I didn't realize that was Sami Zayn from afar until they finally got closer to it.
Right.
That I recognized. So I thought.
Well, yeah, that was a cool, I guess I could say a Shield-like entrance for Sami Zayn. Hometown crowd.
Yeah.
And then, of course, picks up the victory over Chad Gable to retain the Intercontinental Championship. I liked the interview that they showed from earlier in the day with Chad Gable, and where he was training with the Creeds, and then Jackie Redmond asked him about going against the hometown favorite, and Chad Gable knew the deck was kind of stacked against him. Bronson Reed ends up putting both of them on notice, and then Sami Zayn and Chad Gable go out there and have an excellent match. A great main event.
Yeah.
That angle slam from the top rope I thought was dope. I liked all of the ankle lock stuff that Chad Gable was doing in this match. Even to the point where Sami Zayn, obviously they're in that Montreal crowd, goes for a sharpshooter. Can't put it on Chad Gable because his ankle gave out from all the ankle lock stuff.
Yeah, genius play into everything with that.
He goes for a Huluva kick and has to run slower, so Chad Gable's able to reverse that into a released German suplex.
Yeah.
And then Sammy reversed a moonsault from Chad Gable, who technically reversed that right into another ankle lock. And then Sammy obviously was, unfortunately, picking up that victory. He hits that Huluva kick, ended the match, and Sami Zayn helped Chad Gable up afterwards. Gable raised his arm, gave Sami his props. Sami went outside to celebrate with his family. And then from behind, Chad Gable hits that German suplex and beats the hell out of Sami Zayn. Monday Night Raw ends with an ankle lock through the ropes, through the turnbuckles or whatever. I thought that was a fantastic ending to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I love the fact that he ripped Sami Zayn away from his wife for that German suplex, too. Like, it's such a throwback to what took place with Gable, with his kids and stuff like that, with his family, with his daughter and everything, where it's just boiled down to he just couldn't see somebody else being in this moment. And I like this heel turn. I really like this heel turn.
Heel
on Gable.
Turn. Biggest baby face in the world right now. Yes, storyline-wise, I still wish it was Chad Gable who won that title, but this is, I think, going to hopefully take him to a next level. We don't know how Maxine, Akira Tozawa, and Otis will react to this.
Yeah.
So I hope the main thing that I hope from this is that they don't end up falling victim of creative has nothing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we saw Indy Hartwell probably, seemingly, she's going to turn. I mean, she did that heel tactic. It's assumed that we'll see her and Candice go on to be that heel tag team.
Yeah.
Will we see Akira Tozawa, Maxine, and Otis now do the same?
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see them do the same with turning heel, especially with Maxine going against the Way.
I don't think so either.
Yeah,
and that I just hope that they don't fall to the side, and I like all of them, so I hope they're all featured still. Well, that's Monday Night Raw. Moving over to NXT, it kicked off with Noam Dar picking up a victory over Dijak, which was a fun match. Dijak tossing Noam Dar out of the ring like he was trash was very unexpected, and I thought it was a pretty cool thing to see. But later on in that match, when Noam Dar got hit with that choke slam, I didn't expect the match to continue.
Yeah, I thought that Noam Dar, once he got hit with that choke slam, that he was cooked. Especially from Dijak. Dijak is just such a powerhouse.
Yeah, but Oro Mensah ends up getting involved, which distracted Dijak. He was going for Feast Your Eyes, and Noam Dar was able to rock him with that Nova Roller to pick up the victory, and I was blown away by that because I did not expect Noam Dar to win that match at all.
Yeah, I did, especially Dijak coming out coming off of the pay-per-view and stuff like that, I did not expect Dijak to pick up that loss.
Right.
I know. Next up, you had Lola Vice pick up the victory over Sol Ruka.
Blair Davenport cost her the match.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. True. The referee literally saw Blair Davenport get involved, so I don't understand how that's not a DQ.
Yeah, it should have been a DQ finish for Sol Ruka, and I don't...
Unless it was one of those things where it was like the referee maybe perhaps thought that he saw Blair Davenport, but when she got involved, maybe Sol Ruka dodged it. But I could see it looking like that, but at the same time, also, like, I feel like there's no way.
Yeah.
But I like the match. I thought Natalya was going to be the one to cost Lola Vice this match. But Natty ended up showing up afterwards and challenged Lola Vice to an NXT Underground match, which I was about to mark the heck out over. I thought she was going to challenge her to a fight pit, but I'll take an Underground match.
Yeah, why not?
And then meanwhile, Sol Ruka demanded a no DQ match with Blair for next week, I believe, and Ava granted that match.
Yeah.
After that, we had Ariana Grace and Gigi Dolin. They have the makeover throughout the night. I don't get how they didn't already have the makeover because it's been weeks already, but I guess we'll start to see the major changes start happening soon. We saw them dress shop, and Gigi ended up picking out a dress that Ariana Grace approved, and then she cut it up and made it her own inside the dressing room.
I thought that was funny.
But what we'll see from this, I don't understand, because I literally thought we would have seen more. I don't know what I was expecting, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens with that. We saw Ridge Holland pick up this. There, do you hear honking? That's the craziest honking I've ever heard.
I can't hear it.
I've never heard somebody honk like that before. It's so ridiculous. But we saw Ridge Holland. It must be like 10 beeps in a row. Ridge Holland picked up the victory over Joaquin Wilde, where he offered a handshake to start the match. Joaquin Wilde was not having it, though. And Ridge eventually had this match won, lifted up Joaquin Wilde instead of pinning him. And Wilde had a little comeback right there, but Ridge put him down in the end of the match. And Sean Spears came out during this to watch Ridge Holland. And Ridge ends up bumping him on his way to the back of the locker room or whatever. So it seems like we might have some sort of partnership where Sean Spears potentially takes Ridge Holland under his wing.
Could be. It's very possible.
Potentially.
Potentially.
After that, we had the D'Angelos come out. And Tony spoke about the growth of the D'Angelo family, regardless of him not being champion and not winning that match the other week. And then No Quarter Catch Crew interrupted, and they basically said that they're not paying their debt as it should already be paid off, I think is what was said. And then Tony started talking about the Heritage Cup, and he asked about paying off his debts again, and it turned into a brawl between the two teams, and I think we're getting a six-man tag next week, I think.
Yeah, but we'll have to see what happens with that. I did like the brawl that came from it, though. But next up, you had Ilya Dragunov pick up the victory over Javon Evans. I was a big fan of everybody just charged the ring as usual.
Well, beforehand, and even Evans just Ava spoke to Ilya Dragunov earlier, and he was like, "I want a match," and she finally agreed to it. And he said, "Whoever meets him in the ring eye to eye gets the match." So, I enjoyed that aspect of it. We have seen that before in NXT. I don't know if we've seen that on like Raw or SmackDown, but the whole locker room came out to brawl basically. And from behind, it was Javon Evans who got in the ring first.
Yeah, which led to a really impressive match for Evans and Dragunov.
The fans popped big time to see that it was Javon getting in the ring.
Yeah, he was totally over with the fans.
And he stepped up, held his own big time here, and like big time, I think, to go against somebody Ilya Dragunov. I thought that was a very well done match, and he was kicking out of moves that I did not think he was going to be kicking out of.
Yeah.
He literally just had his TV debut last week and then got, I don't want to say got fed to, because it was an actual match.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very well done. Earlier in the night, we saw a vignette with Tatum Paxley where she always wanted to be like everyone else, but then realized that she didn't want to be like everyone else. She wanted to be Lyra because she was the closest thing to good. And then Lyra lost the championship, and she loves the championship the most. And now Lyra is nothing to her because she doesn't have that championship. And she needs the title, and Lyra Valkyria is in the way. And I thought this was a really, really good vignette.
I liked it. I was a fan of it. I don't know. I still have to be sold on Valkyria, even though she was like side to this one. I don't know.
But then
about her.
We also had a segment with Chase Yu and Andre Chase talking to Thea Hale, and Andre spoke and explained his side of the story and how he had to throw in the towel even though it cost him all the money. And Thea Hale wanted to know why he didn't tell her, because she was so mean to him. And he said that he's always going to have her back. And then fast forward, we see Tatum Paxley pick up the victory over Thea Hale, which was just jam-packed with unique submissions from Tatum Paxley. There was one on the ropes. There was one on the corner. There was one that she did on the mat, which I thought all three of those were fantastic.
Yeah, I think that Paxley, from that vignette to this match, she's been very impressive to me. Has Thea Hale been picking up a lot of losses recently?
I
don't remember if she won last week or lost. I feel like
she locked somebody in the Kimura lock and won.
Okay. Good.
Jasmine Nix showed up though and distracted the referee, and then JC pulled Thea Hale off of the rope. Tatum Paxley got a crucifix to pin her on that match. So it's not like if she loses here, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We have a reason why she lost. Two reasons why she lost, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thea Hale attacked JC afterwards, and Lyra attacked Tatum. And then we saw Roxanne Perez get interviewed, where she doesn't care about Lyra Valkyria. She doesn't care about Tatum Paxley. And she said that she'll watch both of them beat each other up, and then maybe one of them get a title match. And Ava shows up, and she's like, well, you know what? Triple threat, spring breaking, bam, roasted. And of course, Roxanne Perez is pissed off because she thinks the world's out to get her.
I mean, she's also not wrong in feeling that way. Look at the track record of it, everything.
I mean,
you know, nothing for nothing, but it does seem like the world is out to get her.
It's not like there's a real reason why there should be a triple threat match, but.
Yes, of course.
But I'm here for it. I was very, very impressed with Tatum Paxley this week on NXT.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that the vignette was a great sell of her and the character, and her matchup was just as good of a sell for somebody to become a fan of Tatum Paxley.
Let me ask you a question, because this really kind of irked me and made me annoyed. Do you think she's anything like Alexa Bliss, Alba Fire, or Isla Dawn? I'm going to say absolutely not. The character is nothing like any of them.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that she has her own unique character.
It's like that was the goofiest comparison I've ever heard or ever read. They wear eyeshadow. That's the common denominator.
They wear dark eyeshadow. They give a kind of a darkish promo, you know. I don't really see it too much.
I don't see it at all.
Yeah. But next up, you had the Authors of Pain pick up the victory over Malik Blade and Inofi.
AOP controlled all the way. Most of this, which was as expected. And then Nathan Fraser and Axiom showed up afterwards, and they were held back. So we got the furthering of that storyline, but it didn't do much for me really here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Ivar picking up the victory over Josh Briggs, which didn't make sense to me because Briggs wanted a match with Obafemi again as well. But I could swear to God, last week we saw Ivar. It seemed pretty set in stone that he was going to be the one getting that match. So I don't understand why Josh Briggs, who just lost his opportunity, would show up and be inserted into this where it's like, no, I'm also going to get a title shot.
Especially just to pick up a loss.
It just didn't make sense, but I thought it was a good big man match.
Yeah, but it wasn't necessary, though.
Yeah, I don't understand why.
You could have just given more time to the cage match.
Yeah, the cage match was a bit of a short match, the main event. We saw Trick Williams pick up the victory over Carmelo Hayes. And like I said last week, for me, I don't get why this needed to happen either. Because this, for me, was the match that should have taken place at Stand and Deliver. It was still a good match, but...
Yeah, I thought the end, I didn't know why everybody had to get involved like that. But
Well, Carmelo Hayes is stacking the deck against Trick Williams. He had his security guard deliver him a club during the match, which I didn't mind him getting. I liked Trick Williams hitting that bookend from the middle rope. And then, ultimately, Carmelo Hayes' security tried to climb in the ring. Trick fought them off. One got into the cage with a chair, and he also fought him off. Trick Williams coming out looking huge and strong in that.
Yeah.
And then Carmelo Hayes tried to use the chair, and Trick ducked it, hit that huge knee to the chair into his face, and picked up that victory, which will set Trick Williams up. I think it has to pretty much set him up for him taking that championship from Ilya Dragunov.
Yeah.
I think we're likely to see Carmelo Hayes go up to the main roster to SmackDown and Ilya Dragunov go up to the main roster.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that this matchup was a send-off to Carmelo Hayes.
Which,
you know? And
by the way, hilarious.
A further passing to Trick Williams of him being him.
When people afterwards were chanting "Thank you, Mello," whatever, and he like did the I don't even know what the gesture is called, but the screw you gesture, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was funny, but maybe the reason why they didn't have this take place at Stand and Deliver was because they wanted to have that in that not home crowd, but the NXT home crowd, I guess. That's like the only reason I could potentially think that took place.
Yeah.
But that's NXT. Going to move over to SmackDown. It opened up with AJ Styles picking up the victory over LA Knight to become the new number one contender. Decent match. WrestleMania rematch. I figured AJ Styles would win this. It's sets up AJ versus Cody Rhodes at Backlash. Makes perfect sense. After that, Triple H and Nick Aldis, like on Monday Night Raw, they showed off new tag team titles for SmackDown. So much nicer than the ones for Monday Night Raw. These ones are a lot like the old SmackDown titles, a lot like the old WWE tag team titles, with like maybe a mix of the Intercontinental Championship in there. And I wish the only thing different I would have had was a little bit of blue. But they were so much nicer. And then A-Town Down Under kind of clown Triple H. And I thought that was a funny part of the segment. And they stayed out to watch the next match and do commentary. Where the Street Profits picked up the victory over New Catch Republic, Authors of Pain, and Legado to become the number one contenders. I like the tag spot with Montez Ford to Pete Dunne, who then tagged in Tyler Bate. I thought there was a nice series of moves there. The airplane spin spot I thought was funny, where they all helped Tyler Bate lift up one of the members of AOP. And then the moonsault spot with Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and then the dive over the ring post from Montez Ford I thought was awesome. I would have been surprised if any other team except for the Street Profits won this. But the actual surprising part of this, I'd say, was how long this match was. And I thought it was very well done. And then earlier in the night, we saw Solo Sikoa pull up in a suit. And he introduced Paul Heyman to Tama Tonga as his MFT. And I don't know what that is. I see people guessing on Twitter, but I don't know. But he also made Paul Heyman take him to Kevin Owens. And then Paul later on couldn't find Kevin Owens. So Solo went to go to the ring and Paul stopped him and said he's making decisions that he can't yet make. And Solo cut him off. They go to the ring. Paul went to speak about the backstage politics going on with the Bloodline. But Solo grabbed the mic and he got some Dominic level heat here. I thought that was pretty impressive. And he said that he needed to lose a brother in order to gain a new one. And then Kevin Owens was thrown out of the entranceway, covered in blood, being beaten down by Tama Tonga. Kevin Owens fought back, but Solo Sikoa joined in. Tama eventually grabs a chair, and Nick Aldis steps in to stop him. And then that segment ends. Nick Aldis is with Paul Heyman in the parking lot and asked Paul if he was aware of what happened. There was a car accident. I guess it was Tama Tonga smashing his car into Kevin Owens' car. That explains why Kevin was busted open the way he was. And Nick Aldis said, Paul said it wasn't authorized. And Aldis said that on his show, they settle things in the ring. And that Paul Heyman better get it under control. Then after that, we saw Santos Escobar pick up the victory over Carlito. Escobar earlier in the day was asked about Dragon Lee, and he said that if they were the ones that took Dragon Lee out, they would have come out and said it was them. They're not going to hide behind an attack that they didn't do. And then Electra Lopez got involved in this, and Zelina tried to take her out, but Electra Lopez took her down. And then Escobar, while the referee was dealing with that, ends up getting a low blow on Carlito before winning the match with that Phantom Driver. I thought we were going to find out who attacked Dragon Lee. But that's not the case. In the main event, we saw Bayley either defeat Naomi or it was a no contest. I'm not 100% sure. But either way, Bayley is still champion. Earlier in the night, Naomi cut a promo. I thought that was good. And then Bayley spoke about Rhea Ripley and how she is now the only women's champion in WWE right now. And then we saw Damage Control sit up in a suite to watch this. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair pulled up in the suite next to them to watch it. I thought this was a good match. I liked the reversals that both of them did. And I liked the shot-for-shot forearm spot that Bayley and Naomi did. But Bayley, they went to the outside of the ring. She hit a Bayley-to-belly onto the commentary table, seemingly out of nowhere. And out of nowhere, Tiffany Stratton showed up, attacked both of them. So she attacked Bayley first. That's why I don't know if it was a no contest or a DQ or whatnot. But I was not expecting that to be an outcome of SmackDown or that match in general. But I did like the match. WWE, apparently there's some releases happening, which is very unfortunate. I don't know if there's going to be more to come afterwards, but the very first one that showed up was Jinder Mahal saying he quits. Maharaja out and changes profile to 90 days. He's apparently been released by WWE. Xia Li put out a post. She's apparently been released by WWE. And Zion Quinn also was released. So it's unfortunate, especially with somebody like Jinder Mahal, who is a former WWE champion. Xia Li, I could swear she was literally advertised for the Battle Royal on Monday Night Raw. So that sucks. I think the whole Tian Sha thing that NXT had was gold, and they let it go for some reason. I don't know why they stopped doing it. Unfortunate. I don't know if there's going to be more releases. If there are, we'll cover it next week. I'm going to take a quick little break right now, and I'll be right back here on Marking Out.
Hey, everyone. This is Todd McFarlane, creator of Spawn and co-creator of Venom, and you're listening to Marking Out. No better place to be.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Marking Out, episode 689. Moving back to AEW Rampage from last week, it kicked off with Orange Cassidy picking up the victory over Alex Reynolds. Very nice to see Alex Reynolds wrestling on TV again. I wish it was a victory, but I think overall this was a super solid match. Alex Reynolds hit that stunner from the middle rope, which was dope. I wish that was the finish, but Alex Reynolds accidentally took Johnny Silver out by mistake, and then Orange Cassidy took both of them out and hit another orange punch in the ring to pick up that victory. And then Renee came in and asked Orange Cassidy about Trent. And then Trent showed up. Chuck Taylor showed up from behind, and it looked like he was about to attack Orange Cassidy, but he stopped Trent from getting in the ring ultimately. And then walked off by himself. And I literally thought that was going to be like the huge heel turn moment for Chuck Taylor, but that didn't happen. And I would have been there for it. After that, we saw Julia Hart pick up the victory over Layla Hirsch to retain the championship. I think it's bizarre that it's been over 2 years since we've seen Layla Hirsch on AEW TV. I know she was out injured, and then I guess she's just been in Ring of Honor since then. But this was a very disappointing match because there was like nothing to it. And I was very excited to see it, but it didn't do what I thought it was going to. After that, Zack Knight picked up the victory over Angelo Parker. Knight debuted in February, and it should not have taken 2 months to get this match. I'm not really a fan of how they handled his debut overall. I don't know if there was behind the scenes things that were preventing him from having this match. I don't think there were. But he beat the hell out of Angelo Parker before the match. Parker got busted the heck open. Still wanted to go. And then we saw Saraya and Harley Cameron both get involved. And the referee kicked them from ringside. But when he was dealing with that, Parker got kicked below the belt. And Knight beat the hell out of him. So I thought it was a very well done selling between the two of them, but this I can't get invested in this match or this feud at all. Main event saw Jay White pick up the victory over Matt Sydal. When they showed the graphic on Dynamite last week, I literally thought Matt Sydal was Brian Cage, so I was surprised when they were like, Jay White taking on Matt Sydal. But I thought this match was fine. Nothing about this screamed main event, and I think Jay White needs a huge push. I don't know, on Dynamite, not to skip ahead, they challenged the Acclaimed for the Trios Championships. I don't think that's getting them there. I don't think that's getting Jay White the push that he needs. On AEW Collision, though, we had the House of Black pick up the victory over Action Andretti, Dante Martin, and Matt Sydal. A lot of this felt rehearsed. And the referee had almost no control, but at least the teams were making tags. And the House of Black used a cool new finisher, which was pretty cool. All three of them got to do it. So I was a fan of the finish. After that, Shibata picked up the victory over Lee Moriarty. Anthony Ogogo was on commentary for this. And I think most of this match was good. I hated the chops spot, because I just thought they looked like trash from Lee Moriarty. I hate when they do stuff like that. I hate those chops, always. And I think both men in this match needed to win. Obviously, that can't happen. And Shane Taylor attacked Shibata afterwards, and Hook made the save, essentially setting up for Battle of the Belts. We saw Daniel Garcia pick up the victory over Angelico. Not a long match. Garcia controlled most of it. I'm still wondering if he'll be the one that takes the title from Edge eventually. I'm not sure when, but it seems like he should, but I don't know for sure. We saw Toni Storm pick up the victory over Azumi, which was really cool to see her there. Anna Jay was interviewed on AEW Rampage, and she was pissed off about Toni Storm, Mariah May, and Mina Shirakawa, and how none of them take wrestling seriously like she does. And Azumi showed up, and I guess that set up this match. Some of this was a comedy match, but the parts that weren't, I enjoyed. We saw Anna Jay brawl with Mariah Maid to the back. Fantastic German suplex from Izumi. And I definitely feel like she may have been holding back in regards to what she's capable of. Because if you watch like video packages of her, I feel like she's way more brutal than what we got to see on that episode. But Toni Storm ends up rubbing her face all over Mariah's after. And that was the weirdest bushwhacker thing I've seen since the Bushwhackers. Thunder Rosa was interviewed. I don't think this needed to be an interview. I feel like this could have just been a promo. Maybe. And when some of it, not really necessarily something that I needed to hear. The beginning of it seemed like one of those cringe Edge promos. And then she moved on to talking about Deonna Purrazzo and said she doesn't need help. And then she moved on to Toni Storm. And I think the ending of this was much better. And when this aired, people were putting this over to be one of the best promos in AEW history, which I really don't think so. I think it was a fine promo. And like I said, the ending I enjoyed more so than the beginning or the middle. In the main event of Collision, we saw the Blackpool Combat Club pick up the victory over the Don Callis family. I feel like Ospreay should have been ringside watching this since Bryan was in the match. But it was a very chaotic match to the point where I forgot who was legal at times. And it was a very long match. I don't think it needed to be that long. I think it was over 25 minutes or something. And I really hated that chair spot. I didn't like that at all. Afterwards, Takeshita attacked Bryan Danielson. Tried to take him out. Obviously, Bryan's got that match against Will Ospreay. So it sets up more Don Callis family versus Bryan Danielson, Blackpool Combat Club. There's a whole mess of that on Dynamite. Battle of the Belts kicked off with Hook picking up the victory over Shane Taylor to retain. Earlier, they showed Chris Jericho talking to Taz from last Dynamite to get Taz to talk to Hook for him. And Jericho in this whole storyline is just coming off as an ex-girlfriend who's trying to get back together with her boyfriend. And it's just cringe. The match itself, I thought the comeback spots from Hook were good. Hook kept locking Shane Taylor in the Red Rum. And Taylor kept getting out until that final one where Hook had him on the mat. Boom. Choked him out. Afterwards, Roderick Strong picked up the victory over Rocky Romero. This was a non-title match on a Battle of the Belts. Battle of the Belts. Non-title match. How that happens, beyond me. And if Roderick Strong was going to win the match, why have it be an eliminator match? Why not just put the title on the line? You obviously don't care about the rankings unless it's in the storyline. There's no point in doing, and the storylines that they've been doing with these rankings have been the same cut and paste storylines. I'm number one. If I beat you, I'm number one. If I beat you, we're tied. Same exact storyline. So you don't care about the rankings. Just make it a title match. It makes no sense. Kyle O'Reilly showed up afterwards to celebrate. He also checked on Rocky Romero. He picked Rocky up and Wardlow put him down. And then Kyle's like, what the hell, brother? And then Roderick Strong took Kyle O'Reilly out. That sets up Dynasty. The match that I've been saying that has to be that match. It has to be Kyle O'Reilly picking up that victory. Main event of Battle of the Belts. Very, very surprising. Athena picked up the victory over Red Velvet to retain. It has been a long time since we've seen Athena. So that was very unexpected that they announced her for this, to have her on there, especially in the main event. Athena had a very good promo on Collision, but she referred to Red Velvet as a top star, which is definitely not accurate. Look at the top stars in AEW. Red Velvet's not there. That's on AEW, not on Red Velvet. And then Red Velvet was interviewed as well on Collision, and I think it was a decent rebuttal. I don't know how this ended up on the card, but it was the longest match on the show, and it was a somewhat slow match, but I thought it was a very well done match. And I think Athena, even through clips that you see on Twitter from Ring of Honor, she might be the best champion that they currently have in the company, and they don't even utilize her on television. So I think that's a huge mistake on Tony's and AEW's part. But I didn't like the ending of this match with the beatdown. Queen Amidala showed up to what seemed like zero reaction to make the save, and it didn't seem like the fans cared about AEW closing with the Ring of Honor angle, which you can't fault them for. It wasn't mentioned on Dynamite. I don't know if it'll be mentioned on Collision or Rampage. Probably not. Dynamite kicked off with Jon Moxley, who spoke about being the IWGP champion, and he brought up Don Callis and the Don Callis family. The main thing was challenging Powerhouse Hobbs to a match on AEW Dynamite next week, Jacksonville main event. And he wasn't going to be done with them just yet. Put a pin in that. After that, we saw Mercedes Moné. She addressed the attack from last week, and she blamed Julia Hart. She may have also kind of blamed Willow. She didn't name Willow in that sentence, but she spoke about maybe somebody being too afraid to face her at Double or Nothing. Right now, the two front runners to face her at Double or Nothing seem to be Julia Hart or Willow Nightingale. So that's why I would assume the blame was there, but it wasn't fully. And then they cut to the next match. Willow Nightingale ends up being attacked backstage beforehand. So that's 2 weeks in a row that somebody's been attacked. We don't know who's attacking the people. Maybe it'll turn out to be Chris Statlander. I don't know. I hope not. And then we have the House of Black pick up the victory over Edge and Willow Nightingale. This was the match I was looking forward to the most, so it was very, very, very annoying to see the match get changed through the storyline and not actually get what was advertised, because we did get that little tiny portion of it, but I wanted like the full experience of the mixed tag match here. Willow makes her way back out eventually. The referee let her tag Edge's foot to get into the match, which I hate when it's not hand, shoulder. A foot is not a tag. But she fought Brody King a bit, which I was impressed by. But Julia Hart clocked her with Brody King's chain, knocks her out, and that was the end of the match, basically. And then Mercedes showed up to chase Julia off with a chair. And it looked like she was going to tease a chair shot to Willow. She dropped the chair, shook Edge's hand. Welcome to AEW sort of thing, or hello, I'm back. Nice to see you again. Fellow WrestleMania main eventer, how do you do? That was the end of that segment, though. We saw the Elite pick up the victory over Pac, Daniel Garcia, and Penta. Boring match. Pac and Penta, not boring. But overall, this was a very boring match to me. The Young Bucks are just beyond boring. Okada being put with the Young Bucks, anytime they're in a segment together, I am bored by it. They grabbed ladders afterwards, and I was surprised. It was actually Pac who made the save. I was expecting FTR, given that they're feuding with the Young Bucks, but it was Pac with that little tiny hammer, I guess just to chase off to further their feud with Okada. After that, Chris Jericho, Hook, and Taz had an in-ring segment. It was not necessary. It hasn't been necessary for weeks. And Jericho ends up pushing Taz. Hook gets in Jericho's face, but it didn't come to blows. He just pushed your father to the ground. Beat the hell out of him. That gets pent up and saved for a match for Dynasty that nobody wants to see. This is the dumbest storyline. It's based on Chris Jericho trying to manipulate Hook and trying to force his opinions on Hook. People have the right to choose not to have Chris Jericho's guidance. His father is Taz. He doesn't need Chris Jericho's guidance. After that, Deonna Purrazzo picked up the victory over Mariah May. Good match. Toni Storm and Mariah ends up attacking Deonna Purrazzo afterwards. Thunder Rosa made the save. I wish the match was longer. And then after that, Orange Cassidy picked up the victory over Shane Taylor. Maybe I forgot, but I could swear Shane Taylor said he wanted to do this alone. But Anthony Ogogo and Lee Moriarty both got involved. They beat Orange Cassidy down afterwards, which we just saw in the last segment. Same cut and paste formula for almost every single match this week. Matt Sydal and Christopher Daniels tried to make the save, but Trent took them out with the chair. So the only difference in this segment from all the other ones is that they weren't able to make the save. We saw Will Ospreay pick up the victory over Claudio. This was a great main event. Really good match. I think the counters were fantastic. But the Don Callis family end up beating Claudio down afterwards. John Moxley makes a save. This was the exact same formula. Mox made the save, which I was expecting Bryan Danielson to be part of. He has the match with Ospreay. Not the case. And then they set up, they pack all these matches into Collision to further Dynasty. This should be your go-home show. Everything that happens on Collision, it makes no sense. You don't need these millions of matches to take place before the actual match itself. Then why should I want to go see the match itself on pay-per-view? You're packing too many weeks of stories into this 1 week of wrestling. Let stuff breathe. It's like Mercedes Moné. Why was she on TV completely fine this week? She was taken out. Let it breathe. Let her be taken out for the week. Let her show up at Dynasty and be like, what the hell? I was attacked. Screw you. I know it was you. It just doesn't make sense. And then you go over, it's literally the end of Dynamite. 10 p.m. Earlier on, they had Samoa Joe do a sit-down interview. Completely pointless segment. And then they had Swerve, who's now back to looking like a vampire, have a segment by himself also. And he said he's going to go to the ring and do something later on. And then later on, the show's over. We're in extra innings here. And Swerve ends up stomping through the whole security team, which was the coolest spot from Dynamite. And then he and Joe brawled, where Joe came out on top. There was no need to have those two segments earlier. You could have just had this segment. You could have just had Swerve show up at the end of the show. I'm calling Samoa Joe out. And then have this segment happen the way it happened. You wasted time for no reason. So that's Dynamite. Moving over to AEW Dynasty, taking place in St. Louis, Missouri, at the Chaffetz Arena. I don't know if anything's going to be added, but we have the winner-take-all AEW World Trios Championships and Ring of Honor World Six-Man Tag Team titles on the line. The Acclaimed taking on the Bullet Club Gold. I really hope the Acclaimed win. This trios run for them has been trash, and that is because they grouped them in with these six-man tag team championships that have no business being on AEW television. I don't think this is going to elevate Jay White to where Jay White needs to be. He doesn't need to be a trios champion. Maybe things change because of Juice getting injured. I have no idea. This is really taking Jay White down. Give the Acclaimed the run that they deserve. I'm going to pick the Acclaimed, although I'm probably incorrect. We have Edge, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe taking on the House of Black. They really didn't do anything to set this up on Dynamite. And I really, at this point, I hope the House of Black win. I'm going to pick Edge, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe, but I want the House of Black to win this big time. FTW rules match, FTW championship on the line, Hook versus Chris Jericho. If Jericho wins, I will be absolutely devastated. I'm going to pick Hook. I really hope it's Hook. For the international championship, Roderick Strong defending the title against Kyle O'Reilly. Has to be O'Reilly. I'm picking Kyle. House rules match, AEW TBS championship on the line. Julia Hart, the champion, defending the championship against the challenger, Willow Nightingale. I think the only outcome of this that makes sense is Willow winning and then setting up Double or Nothing, the TBS championship against Willow and Willow versus Mercedes Moné. And take it back to that last match that they had where Mercedes was unfortunately injured and missed that whole chunk of her career. So I'm going to say hopefully Willow Nightingale wins. Julia Hart, I think, has been an incredible TBS champion, and she has grown so much with that character. She's a breath of fresh air when she's actually wrestling. I don't count that match that she had on Dynamite as feeling fresh. But then for the AEW Continental Championship, Okada will be taking on Pac. As much as I would love for Pac to win, I can't see Okada losing the title yet. Gonna say Okada retains. Young Bucks facing off FTR in a ladder match for the vacant AEW Tag Team Championships. It seems like it's gonna be the Young Bucks. As much as I want it to be FTR, it seems like the only outcome for this is going to be Young Bucks. For the AEW Women's Championship, Timeless Toni Storm defending the title against Thunder Rosa. Toni Storm is going to win this match. Will Ospreay taking on Bryan Danielson is probably the toughest call here, but I'm going to say Will Ospreay beats Bryan Danielson. And then for the AEW World Championship, Samoa Joe defends the title against Swerve Strickland. It has to be Swerve. Has to be Swerve. If Swerve loses this, that's all. There goes all the momentum, everything that Swerve's built up. As much as I wanted Samoa Joe to have a very lengthy title run and a very dominant title run, I think it has to end at Dynasty. And I think we need to see Swerve become that champion. So that's AEW predictions for Dynasty. Hey, Brandon, got any shout outs?
Hi, this is Casey Kasem. And up next on the American Top 40, Brandon shout outs.
The first shout out goes to Bob Marley, One Love. It is streaming on Paramount Plus now, and I watched the movie. I thought it was good, but I did not realize that this wasn't going to be a full life story of Bob Marley. It just kind of like heavily focused on when Exodus was being made, and plus like extra stuff sprinkled in here and there. But it's too bad that Bob Marley passed away when he was only 36, because I really would have liked to have seen him perform live.
Just so young. I mean, you hear the age 36 and, you know, and even the 27 club, and it's just awful when you reckon, like, when you really realize how young all of these musicians are. They were kids. I mean, and like you said, I wish that I could have seen Bob Marley perform live. I do want to see that movie. It does look really good.
Yeah, it was decent. And I've seen some Wailers live. I've seen Steven and Damien live. What really sucks is that the Marley brothers are reuniting to tour for the first time in like 20 years. But the cheapest tickets were like $100. So that really sucked, because I would have liked to have seen them. It's Ziggy, Steven, Julian, Kamani, Damien. So, and they've done like one-off shows here and there, but their last like actual tour, I think, was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like I said, I wish I could have seen Bob in concert as well. If you want an actual documentary about Bob Marley's life, I would highly recommend Marley. That was released in 2012. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. I thought that was a very, very well done documentary. But sticking on the theme of music right now, I don't know whose call it was, but I'm going to give an anti-shout out to CBS because they've been hyping up airing Billy Joel's 100th concert that took place at Madison Square Garden, his 100th concert of the residency at Madison Square Garden that took place last month. And I, man, they aired it and it was on late due to the Masters. Then songs were chopped up and placed out of order. And they took a commercial break right at the end during Piano Man.
That's messed up.
I thought this was so goofy, and like, it's crazy because the director of this was the same director that did Taylor Swift's Reputation tour, the Netflix special for that, and I thought that was a fantastic special.
Yeah.
This was...
I didn't see it, but I'm not a fan of just cutting in between songs like that, but I do have a DVR'd, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
You don't have a DVR'd.
Yeah, I do.
No, you don't. You have to have it DVR'd for Friday.
What do you mean?
Did you not hear me say it aired late because of the Masters? Everyone was furious over this.
Yeah, but I thought I had it. I'm going to have to check now.
How could you have had it? The one that aired on Sunday was not, it aired late. It was so, it was awful. It was awful. I don't know whose call that was on any of it. That's not what I wanted. You have Elton John have a live final concert of that the U.S. tour on Disney Plus. That's what I wanted.
Maybe my DVR is better than yours.
That doesn't make sense. Maybe your DVR new. I don't know.
For Friday.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Damn.
But I mean, also, if you don't have Paramount Plus, right?
Nah.
If you had Paramount Plus, you could have watched it in full, no commercials.
Yeah. Ooh.
But, and that's where you can watch Bob Marley One Love as well. But my last shout out goes to Dickie Betts, who unfortunately passed away this week at the age of 80. He was a founding member of the Allman Brothers Band and wrote their biggest hit, Ramblin' Man. And I think he, obviously alongside the group, helped define a whole genre of music. So definitely spend your weekend listening to the Allman Brothers, listen to Bob Marley, listen to the Marleys and everything, and just remember these legends, these icons. So,
yeah, agreed.
Those are my shout outs. Now it's time for our mark out moment of the week. I am going to kick it off with WWE's Most Wanted Treasures being back for a new season. And they did a whole WCW episode with Hulk Hogan, Harlem Heat, and the Steiner Brothers. And I think that's cool. It was a bit goofy where Mick Foley went to Hulk Hogan looking for WCW gear, specifically NWO gear, and then walked out with 2002 NWO gear, which I don't understand. And I think that the price that was like estimated was like $10,000. But
jeez, brother,
which I'll talk about more in a moment, because throughout the episode, you have somebody owned Kevin Nash's singlets from Bash at the Beach 96, and then the singlet that he wore at the Finger Poke of Doom. Two huge turning points in pro wrestling that Kevin Nash was part of. And the guy that owned them, they were signed singlets or whatever, which, by the way, was very, very weird to see the full Kevin Nash singlet, because normally he's wearing pants. You don't see the bottom of those singlets. But the dude let these two singlets go for tickets within the first five rows to WrestleMania for both nights. And they valued the singlet from $5,000 to $7,000, which makes no sense how 2002 NWO tights would be more expensive, more valuable than literally the formation of the NWO and the beginning of the end of WCW.
Jeez, come on, Marks.
There's no way that those are not worth more.
I hate when people give up stuff for tickets.
I don't hate that, but
I'm not a fan of that.
That's... I don't know. I don't hate that you would give it up for tickets, but I think there should have been monetary additional exchanges there.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I don't like it when they kind of do stuff with baseball teams with the, like what happened with
that woman got screwed.
Yeah, Ohtani's baseball. You know, like, it's just awful. You know?
I think it was a woman.
Yeah, it was.
But it's cool to see the old gears and stuff, but just that... Because to me, when you have a ticket, it's like WWE has all the tickets. They could set the ticket.
Yeah, just not a fan.
And although there is monetary value, a lot of monetary value behind those tickets, I think it's just like a thing that WWE could just like hand out.
Exactly.
So I don't agree with the evaluation of the price of those singlets if Hulk Hogan's tights from not even WCW NWO were going to be more expensive. So I marked out watching that episode. I also marked out having fighting with my family on before Monday Night Raw. So I got to watch some of that. Normally it's like Law and Order, I think. So it was surprising to see that. I like lifted my head up and I saw Vince Vaughn. I was like, what is this? And then I realized it was Fighting with My Family.
There you go. So I thought that was cool. Watched all of it.
And Saraya, I think somebody tagged her and she like noted that as well. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
You have any markout moments? Because I got probably a ton more.
No, that's good for me.
Well,
nothing over here.
TikTok this week has blown up since WrestleMania, and all of these non-wrestling fans have been reacting to it because it somehow made its way onto their timelines on TikTok, and I think it's pretty cool to see how they're like into it. Mm-hmm. And this one chick spoke so highly of the spot with Undertaker. And Undertaker commented on it, which I think is like really crazy that Undertaker is using TikTok. Even if it's not Undertaker, it's like the Undertaker's TikTok account, mm-hmm. which is not a sentence you think you would hear. But he commented on it and he's like, oh, maybe it's time to go to a show or something. So I don't know if she's going to get free tickets or what.
That's
but
cool.
If you're on wrestling TikTok, I'm sure you saw the videos.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, Charles Barkley was on Pat McAfee's show this week and spoke about WWE with Pat, mainly about The Rock and WrestleMania and the Bloodline and Cody Rhodes and everything. But then he also spoke about how he wanted to go up to Canada and beat Chad Gable up for what he did to Sami Zayn in front of his wife. And I thought that was hilarious to hear Barkley talk about Chad Gable doing that. So I thought it was really cool that, like, wrestling fans, you never know who's a wrestling fan. I wish more wrestling fans were, like, vocal about it. Yeah.
Ton out there.
So those are the markout moments of the week. That is episode 689. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You could follow us at Markin' Out at BTTG161, Chris Sweendog, CMSweeney85, David PTDPT, and of course, you could like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Markin' Out. You could listen to episodes and watch our videos on Markin' Out, youtube.com/Markin' Out11. You could also follow us on Instagram at Markin' Out 11. You can like us on, not like us, you could follow us on TikTok at Markin' Out. Purchase some merchandise, prowrestlingtees.com/markingout. Check us out on markingout.com, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. And like I said, you could listen to us on YouTube as well. Leave a like. leave a comment. We greatly appreciate it. Rate, review, subscribe. And we wish you the
best of luck in your future endeavors.
Have a fantastic day.